This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. Welcome to The Urologist Speaks again. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. Unfortunately, my usual co-host, Dr. Wesley Francis, is presently abroad. But I'm pleased to welcome again Dr. Charles Jeremy Jr. Not the senior, but the junior in the same specialty, ear, nose, and throat specialist, otolaryngologist, welcome, Bahamian born and bred. It's a pleasure to have you here. We're going to speak about a lot of problems in our society, and we're going to try to come to solutions medically and otherwise. But you've been here, I think it was in May.
Yeah.
But thanks again for coming. For those who don't know anything about you, tell us a little bit about your schooling, your family, your education, where you see your career headed, and et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Good evening, Bahamas. It's a pleasure to be here, Dr. Pinto. Thank you for having me again. So just a little bit about what I do. So I am an ENT surgeon. I did the academic schooling with the University of West Indies. I spent my early years in Trinidad, Bahamian grown. I spent about 5 years in Trinidad, and then I went to specialize in Kingston, Jamaica for about 7 years. And so I'm a Caribbean baby all around. I love it. And I had great experiences during my schooling there. I also spent some time down in USC and on the West Coast in California, as well as in India, where I did a lot of temporal bone surgery, which is the bone behind the ear, and reconstructing the tympanic membrane, and a lot of sinus surgery. I am married for 11 years, just celebrating my anniversary last June. And I have one daughter. And so we often spend time talking about the practice, how we can improve the practice, as well as other things like, spirituality and family togetherness. And as far as education, we're always striving to impress on our kids the importance of education. So that's one thing we spend time on with our daughter. But it's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, I think we have a similar background. I also spent some time in India, in Europe as well, in France and Germany. I was also in Cape Town, South Africa. So the take home is that for both of us, all around the world, to garner as much in terms of skills and exposure so that our fellow Bahamians don't have to travel abroad to get state-of-the-art, cutting-edge medical treatment in our various specialties. So it took a lot of sacrifice on both our parts, and I think it's great at this point to say I've almost been married 12 years, that you and I would not be what we are, or be even probably a specialist, much less surgeons, if we didn't have loving wives who sacrifice endlessly to support us and get us where we are.
100%.
And so that continues.
That's right. So I just had to shout out my beautiful wife, Shanice Johnson. Baby, I love you. Thank you for supporting me. And we're doing this as a unit, so I appreciate you.
Yeah, so everything I accomplish in life, I'll always say it's in terms of my wife and myself, it's our this, our that, because without her, I wouldn't be anything.
Absolutely.
And that's the way any young man should look at life. The right wife can make you or break you. That's you can't overstate that enough. Someone who loves you through thick and thin, someone who's doesn't want to be with you when you're at the finish line receiving the trophies, but someone who wants to be at with you, push you up even when you want to give up, they're there for you. So I remember my wife waking up and being with me when I had to wake up 2 o'clock in the morning to study.
Absolutely.
And she still had to work, supporting me when I had nothing.
100%.
When my bank account was in the negative balance, the only way I would eat was because of her.
That's right. Don't get my wife started. Trust me. She knows, and she sacrificed so much. So we're grateful to have these great wives in our lives to really undergird us and support us. So shout out to you, wives.
And that's important in anything. And in terms of a family, the Bahamas itself needs more in terms of a nuclear family, where correct. We have an extended family, where we're going to all support each other, where particularly your family, my family, education was stressed. We saw the importance of education to see the world, to experience things, to have a better life than our parents, than our grandparents, and that our children can have a better life than the one that we have. And we're not just talking about economically, but we're talking about in terms of exposure and everything else. So education is the key. Not enough young men, I'd like to talk about that again today, not enough young men in this country see education as a key to a brighter tomorrow, to a better tomorrow, and for a way out of their situation. They may not have been born into the, as I've mentioned many times, poverty does not define you.
Exactly.
Let your hardship allow you to excel. Use that as a motivator.
Exactly.
So no matter what the circumstance, you can achieve anything. Here, because of the government providing free education, even through University of West Indies, like you and I, both, or through the University of the Bahamas. And there's so many even private and government scholarships that allow us to see the world and do anything. If you have the grades, if you have the perseverance, if you have the backbone and the grit to go through living hell. So being a surgeon, there are a lot of brilliant persons who got into surgery and they didn't make it.
Exactly.
There are a lot who never got in. And it's more than just being brilliant. It's more than just being academically inclined or talented. You have to have true grit, and you have to have perseverance, and you have to have that personality. And it's not about money either, because you and I both know our lives are not about money.
Exactly.
It's about helping people. Mm-hmm. There are a lot easier ways to make money.
Absolutely.
Not the dozens of years that we spent sacrificing endlessly and living, if not at poverty, below the poverty line.
That's right.
With no end in sight.
Mm-hmm.
We do it because we love our fellow man, because we want to make the Bahamas a healthier place. And that's why we're here right now.
And it's such a joy to be able to come home. When you're away training and you treat patients that are not from your homegrown country, you feel good. But when you're able to bring that first world experience back to your country and then you see the results, it's a payment in and of itself.
And to know, it may be an individual basis or an IB, within a week, half a dozen patients, you know that you made that life of that person better, and by extension, their family. And in some circumstances, if you hadn't come back and brought that specialized skill, that person may have not survived. So you may have dozens, if not hundreds, of lives.
Absolutely.
And you cannot put a measure on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what will motivate me. That, I know, will motivate you. We're here to talk about education in terms of disease processes. Health of the nation is the wealth of the nation. That's one of the mantras of this radio show. Being proactive, not reactionary. Preventative medicine is very important. So we are an unhealthy nation in so many levels. We're one of the most obese nations in the world. We have one of the highest rates of hypertension and diabetes in the world. And what we're going to talk about falls under your domain and your specialty. Obviously, we're going to make use of you and all the knowledge that you have, and very few persons have. And even within the Caribbean, there are not that many ENT surgeons. So to have you back home is something that, even when I heard you were still persevering, we were waiting for you to come back, and I'm glad you're finally back.
Yes.
So let's talk about something that's really a silent medical epidemic or pandemic in the Bahamas, and that's obstructive sleep apnea. So I'm going to mention, in fact, I saw this patient on Monday. Today is Wednesday, and he's a 33-year-old. He asked me to speak about his story, let someone learn from his story, so maybe someone doesn't go down the road that he went through. obese most of his life from teenage years, a hypertension, he says it runs in the family. He admits a sedentary lifestyle, ate badly, drank too much, smoked cigars with his friends, ended up having the inevitable obstructive sleep apnea. The consequence of that, he got even heavier. Obesity got worse. The diabetes got poor controlled. Even as a young age, he was faced with the depressing prospect of having erectile dysfunction because of low testosterone and because of obstructive sleep apnea and obesity and uncontrolled diabetes. But part of the obstructive sleep apnea led him to have daytime drowsiness where he literally would be fighting sleep all the time, even when he was driving. And eventually he just fell asleep. It was in the early afternoon, crashed into a pole, quadriplegic at the age of 33, and that happened four years ago. So obstructive sleep apnea can be deadly on so many levels. And that can mean you can be a danger to yourself, to those in your car, to other pedestrians, to other motor vehicleists on the street. Let's talk about obstructive sleep apnea. It's estimated in the U.S. at least 22 million adults have obstructive sleep apnea. In this country, with the high rate of obesity, we estimate about 20% of our adult population has obstructive sleep apnea, men and women. So let's talk a little bit about what are some of the symptoms of obstructive sleep apnea.
So obstructive sleep apnea is really partial airway obstruction when you're breathing through your nose to get the air to your lungs. And there are many steps along the way from the tip of the nose to the entry into the lungs. And so there can be multiple parts of obstruction that create this obstructive sleep apnea. And so patients may go to bed and they may be sleeping and they may be snoring and their partner may realize that they're gurgling, they've stopped breathing for a few seconds, they pitch up in the night to catch their breath, and they're going through this exercise within their sleep just to try to get oxygen. And it leads to a very uncomfortable sleep after about 6 hours of doing that. So these patients would usually wake up feeling unrested. We call that ineffective sleep, right? Where they're not rested. As soon as they wake up, they feel tired and groggy, right? They wake up and their pressure is high, okay? They've taken their medications, but because that cortisol, which is the stress hormone, is just surging through their body overnight from having their brain constantly cry for oxygen, right? They're very stressed out when they wake up. They have to obviously go to their job, and so they're tired on the job, falling asleep at work. I've had patients falling asleep at the computer, falling asleep at the desk, falling asleep right on their chest because they're large patients sometimes. They just nod forward, and they start to snore. They may be in a room full of their comrades, and you can hear them snoring in the middle of the day. All right, we have assessment scoring systems where we look at the different severities of this obstructive sleep apnea. So some patients may even fall asleep at the wheel, as we've mentioned before, at the stoplight or even mid-conversation while they're talking to the doctor, talking to their colleague. And these people, as we mentioned earlier, may have high blood pressure that leads to hypertensive and hypertrophic heart disease and have depression. They may have anxiety. They may have what we call erectile dysfunction. They may have low testosterone. And there are clinical studies, because I am an ENT and Dr. Pinto is a urologist. I've tried to, you know, find some articles to link the two of us. And there are clinical studies out there showing the connection between this obstructive sleep apnea and your low testosterone and erectile dysfunction. So it really does play an impact in men's health and men's lives. And so, yeah, definitely you have to look out for these symptoms and get treated immediately.
And what is surprising, and I've read extensively over the years on obstructive sleep apnea, and when we talk about an estimated 22 million Americans have obstructive sleep apnea, at least 80% is estimated do not even know that they have obstructive sleep apnea.
Correct.
I think if you ask the typical Bohemian, what is obstructive sleep apnea, they have absolutely no idea. You talked about a lot of the symptoms. A lot of patients will note that they wake up, as you say, fatigued, sometimes feeling more tired than when they first went to sleep, with a dry mouth. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that. That's very common. They might wake up with a headache as well. They obviously wake up and they need more sleep. And it's not just the hours of sleep. So you could sleep 10 hours, not have that rapid eye movement, deep sleep. You can feel completely drained. Because of it, your testosterone that you're supposed to replenish throughout the day, when you're in your REM sleep, your deep sleep, you're not getting that. And on top of that, you're going to have episodes of IPOM to various organs, from your brain to your heart to your kidneys, of having hypoxic episodes where there's not sufficient oxygen being delivered to these vital organs, is profound. It's going to reduce the quality of your life, and it's going to reduce the quantity of years that you have on this life. It also can exponentially increase your risk of heart disease. It can put you on the path to metabolic syndrome, where you might have a risk of late onset diabetes, hypertension, hypercholesterolemia. It increases your risk of having a cardiovascular event such as a heart attack, or which is myocardial infarction, or a stroke. So it's estimated about 83% of persons with obstructive sleep apnea have type 2 diabetes. About 70% of obese individuals, and we're a very obese nation, have obstructive sleep apnea. And I've said it so many times, and I'm going to keep saying it until there's going to be a change in the paradigm, in the mentality, in the thinking of our nation. When you have obstructive sleep apnea, it's going to make your obesity worse, which is going to make the sleep apnea worse. In a male, it's going to make your testosterone lower, which is going to make the obesity worse. And you just never get off that vicious cycle, and it's going to ruin your life. So it can prevent you from dying of a heart attack or stroke or becoming diabetic, or even if you have diabetes, having it poorly controlled. And if you feel, you should be getting annual physicals, first of all. But if you feel a shell of your former self, if you're putting on weight, you'd have a lot of central obesity, centripetal obesity. You have a bare belly. You don't even drink beer. You can't lose that weight, and it keeps coming on. So you put on weight easily. It's very difficult to lose it. You have, for every male, you have no sexual drive. You lose your muscle mass. You don't have to shave as often. You're going to lose hair on your arms and your legs. And your increased risk of being in a motor vehicle accident, in studies have shown at least 2.5 times greater risk of being in a car accident. So it's profound. And we obviously, anytime we diagnose somebody with any disorder or disease, a thorough history is important, looking at many of the things I just mentioned, looking at symptoms, et cetera. We'll check your testosterone level, make sure that you're not a diabetic. We'll check your blood pressure. We'll check your HbA1c if you're pre-diabetic or diabetic. But when we talk about actual treatment, we always have to have an actual diagnosis. So talk us a little bit to us about the actual monitors. So sleep apnea monitor testing. How Yes. accurate is it? Do you always have to go into a sleep study? A lot of persons will say, oh, I have a watch that tells me how well I sleep. I mean, that will give you a rough idea, but it's not going to tell you the amount of apnea events, et cetera. It's not going to tell you what's happening with your blood pressure, et cetera.
So what we do when we evaluate these patients that are symptomatic of obstructive sleep apnea is we look at their sleep over a period of anywhere from 4 to 6 hours with a sleep test. So these sleep tests can either be in-house or take-home, but the parameters that are very important is the nasal airflow, the amount of movement of air that's going out of the lungs into the environment. We're also going to look at the heart rate. So we do have monitors like an ECG, to look at any spikes in heart rate, any tachycardia. We do monitor as well the pulse oximetry, which is the oxygen saturation, the amount of oxygen going to the brain and going to the arteries through a finger probe. And so this actually can tell us if the oxygen falls below 95%, and also even the arterial flow and the venous flow, they can be timed to assist with rate of respiration. So that's a really cool technology that these new sleep monitors have, as well as chest wall expansion. So normally when the chest wall expands, the diaphragm goes down, the lungs fill up with air. And so we have a monitor around the chest that has elastic recoil, and that would actually be converted into electrical results on a graph to show that recoil. And sometimes patients actually have what we call central sleep apnea. So they do stop breathing, all right, and there is no effort. But on obstructive sleep apnea, where the obstruction is within the upper airway, they are sucking for air, and so the chest is trying to move, but they're not getting air in. So that's how you would differentiate, because the treatment is very different for someone with central sleep apnea versus the obstructive sleep apnea that we typically see in obese patients. And from there, then we can now treat from A to Z with medical treatment, as well as devices, whether it be an oral device, a sleep device, pressure devices, like a new, some people love it, some people hate it, the CPAP machine, and then even onto other maneuvers and surgical devices. So there's a stepwise approach from A to Z, how we would assess and then treat the progress of these patients.
And everybody knows that there are very few people actually stick with using a CPAP machine. They find it cumbersome anytime they travel. They don't want to be lugging it around. They may know that they have obstructive sleep apnea. They realize that they feel a lot better and a lot healthier, and they feel better throughout the day if they use a CPAP machine, but they just find it so uncomfortable. Talk about some other devices that are available that actually have shown clinical significance in terms of treating obstructive sleep apnea. I mean, there are a lot of gimmicks out there. It's
100%.
Yeah. So you need to know what is trusted and what is not, and you're the expert.
So a thorough examination needs to take place in these patients from the level, as I said, the tip of the nose to the laryngeal ilnet to see the level of obstruction. Depending on that level, all right, we can give you a device that will help with improving obstruction at that level. For example, within the nose, we are obligate nasal breathers. What that means is at night, every human being, if they are breathing well, their mouth would be closed. Their mouth is closed. They're breathing clearly through the nose. But let's say there's a tumor in the nose, or there's just edema or swelling or inflammation in the nose, such as sinusitis or enlarged turbinates, right, or something we call conca bullosa, where the turbinates just fill like a balloon and obstruct the nasal airway, and it's very congested, then that provides a level of obstruction. Let's say, for example, at the soft palate, at the back of the throat, right, when you know those cartoons, when they open the mouth, you see the dangling punching bag at the back. Well, in some people, that's a very redundant tissue. And so when they close their mouth and try to breathe, that obstructs the airway at the back of the throat. That's another level. The size of the tongue as well is another level of obstruction. When you lay on your back, gravity pulls it down. And for those obese patients, that weight on the neck also helps to collapse that airway. And then finally, your tonsils. Tonsils are usually very small and very out of the way naturally, but they can hyperplase or become hyperplastic and get large and non-functional and also cause a degree of partial obstruction. So depending on each of these levels, right, we like to teach our patients how we treat each level. So for a nasal device, some people have a very tiny nasal angle or nasal valve at the tip, and that's more in my Caucasian population with narrow noses. Those people can benefit from devices that splint open that nasal valve. Now, you would see these on a lot of commercials and gimmicks, but you have to be diagnosed with a narrow nasal valve less than 10 degrees to benefit from that, and that has to be the only point of obstruction. If we widen the nasal valve, whether it be with a device or with rhinoplasty, which is an extensive, expensive surgery, and we don't resolve behind the tongue or within the nose, then the patient doesn't benefit. Specialist to actually diagnose which level of obstruction is in that particular patient, where it won't be a cookie cutter treatment for the other patient, because every patient is different. All right, so that is one device that is sold widely to widen the nasal valve, but it doesn't work for some people because their point of obstruction is different. There are tons of oral devices on the market that you can get over the counter on Amazon. Yet again, if you're not diagnosed with the particular level of obstruction, then that you cannot be sure that that will work for you. What the aim is for those people with a large tongue or tongues that fall back is to try and protrude the tongue forward and hold the tongue open so that the airway is splinted open. And so for persons with a short jaw, a short mandible, right, we call that micrognathia. Some people even have an Andy Gump deformity where, I don't know if you all remember the character Andy Gump, but he had no chin. And so some babies are born this way, and they obviously will have respiratory symptoms. They will definitely benefit from advancing the tongue or advancing the mandible, right? So it's, again, incumbent before you use these oral devices to be sure where your level of obstruction is. Over 40% of patients have multiple points of obstruction, and so therefore each point of obstruction must be dealt with. And so some are dealt with devices and do well. Others may need some form of medication and surgery. And While the CEP is the gold standard, it's not very, the compliance is very low, and so it must be talked about. But I think you have to give the patients the holistic picture and the realistic picture on what can help them get from point A to point B so that they are rested, so that they can now use that energy to exercise and bring down the weight. And there are other modalities to help with the weight during these devices and treatments, such as your semaglutides and other diabetic medication that may help assist with weight loss. So many things on the market.
So it's fundamentally important to let the Bahamian public realize how serious a disease this is. This is basically a deadly disease. It's silently killing you and taking years off of your life, even decades off of your life. So you're not going to live as long, particularly if you have moderate or severe obstructive sleep apnea. Maybe God had it as planned to have you live to 92. You may only make 61. And that's because you ignored the fact you have obstructive sleep apnea and all of the health disorders associated with that. For half of our population out there, we're males. Number one organ, and everyone, I don't even have to go further than that, is your male organ. You want your erections working. This is, goes hand in hand with erectile dysfunction. Any male with obstructive sleep apnea for numerous reasons is going to have erectile dysfunction. So even from that point of view, a lot of men, they live in the moment, and the moment is erectile dysfunction right now. They may not want to look at the abstract that when maybe when they're 65, they're going to be having severe health issues because of the obstructive sleep apnea. Or in theory, you may be able to convince them that, all right, I'm not only going to live to 70 instead of 90 because of obstructive sleep apnea. They don't want to think about that, but they want to think that, you know what, tonight my erection is going to work. So let's use that as a motivator. Good health, good cardiovascular health goes hand in hand with good erectile function. And for many men, I find that that is a motivator. It's going to get them into the office. It's going to get them to get their work up. It's going to get them to a healthier them by addressing the root cause of what might have caused erectile dysfunction. And for this in particular, we're talking about obstructive sleep apnea. That is almost a certainty if you have moderate or severe obstructive sleep apnea that you're going to have some form of erectile dysfunction. So let's use that to hammer home the point that this is very, very important if you want to live long and you want to live a better life. And we just spoke about it. Who's going to have a good quality life? How are they going to have any social life? How are they going to have any success professionally? That every time they're in, we can go with so many professions. Taxi drivers, how are you going to drive when you're falling asleep all the time? If you're a teacher, how are you going to teach a class if you're fighting sleep all the time? How are you going to be an executive in a board meeting if you can't keep yourself awake? And not only keep yourself awake, there's a term, brain fog. You're going to have poor memory. It's going to affect your memory. It's going to affect your concentration. When, particularly for men, when you have low testosterone, it's going to affect your motivation to do things, even motivation to succeed, motivation to play dominoes or to do things you used to love. So a lot of that low testosterone side symptoms of low testosterone and signs would be you have no interest in doing things anymore. You just want to have a more sedentary lifestyle, which is going to make the obesity worse. So it's ruining our nation. There's so many things that are ruining our nation. We'll get into other things such as crime and the poor education system and problems with the justice system and everything else. I'll get your opinion on that. But from your standpoint, I know you've been home a little while now. How is obstructive sleep apnea affecting the typical woman, man? And even we talk about teenagers or 25% of our young persons, particularly females, are obese. How are you seeing a lot of younger persons, preteens, teens, young adults, also with obstructive sleep apnea, and how is that affecting their health?
Definitely. The younger populace is joining, they're joining the workforce a lot earlier. I mean, back in my uncle's time, for example, he joined the police force at 16. Although they're not joining the police force that young, I do have a lot of police force workers, for example, working and they may get used to the life. You know, they have to jog a mile in 6 minutes at first, but after the first 10 years, they get sedentary, they want to relax, they get promotions. And so I have a lot of my friends who come and talk to me about, you know, just life slowing down, putting on the weight, Doc, how do I get my libido back, how do I get back in shape? And so I do have a lot of young, active members of society falling into that trap. As far as college students and brain fog, there are quite a few with breathing problems. You know, the allergies run rampant in Bahamas, and August was rough. So we've had quite a lot of college students come in with breathing issues, sleep issues, and weight issues, right? And that led to, obviously, the brain fog, the unpreparedness, and the anxiety of exams and so forth. So we've had to be treating those patients with you know, anti-allergy medications, as well as advice on sleep, and even some of them testing for sleep apnea and treatment for sleep apnea. But certainly, as it affects the young population, it is a burden on them, particularly for the young men who would come in that are overweight, and they would say, well, Doc, you know, the only part of my life that's bothering me is really, you know, down there with my girl, and I'm having issues. And, you know, I tell them, well, what do you plan to do? Are you going to lose the weight? Do you want some assistance losing the weight? Let's test you. Let's see how you fall on the severity scale. And they're like, you know, Doc, you know, I'm good with my pill from the gas station. I'm good with my honey pack. And that can only carry you so far, you know, as a young man. If you continue, like Dr. Pinto said, and you don't see the signs and pay attention to the signs, then even though that's all that's affecting you, that'll be hard to get back. The honey packs can only get you so far as a young man, because you want to be strong into your 80s. You want to be strong into your old age. And I do have quite a few patients, and I'm sure Dr. Pinto does as well, and they are strong into their old age. They don't have much fat on them. They're still active, and they still can do things. So that's what we want for all young men: good libido, good erectile health throughout your senior years. And as it relates to women, certainly our BMI is higher than normal on a worldwide scale. So a lot of the women that are presenting with a bit of overweight, now it's a sensitive topic because they do birth our children, they do bring forth life, and we want to encourage them. But it has to be spoken about that sleep apnea in women is a big deal, and it leads to them feeling tired, the anxiety, and the burnout. Right? Raising kids while working in this today's time, picking up from school, all of the things that they do to make a home, and then they're feeling that burnout because they're not sleeping well. So it's something that I do talk to them about on the background of obesity, on the background of sleep deprivation, and on the background of allergy, because the allergies do congest the nasal sinuses very often. And what we call polyps usually tease into that nasal cavity and block it right up for some of those patients. And so allergy is a big part of it that we're seeing now in this younger population with sleep apnea.
So we just talked about motivating men to take their health seriously. If they do have obstructive sleep apnea, to address it and try to seek help. You spoke about something dangerous that happens all the time in the society, where men are treating their own erectile dysfunction and not looking for the root cause. Eventually, those unregulated medications, which can do untold harm to you, you take it at your own risk. I always say your gas station attendant is not your physician. Eventually, whatever is causing the problem is going to become so overwhelming, and it's going to cause irreversible damage to your nerve supply, the blood supply to your male member. It's going to cause untold harm to your other organs, your heart, your lungs. So if it's affecting your male member, it's also affecting your kidneys. It's also affecting your eyes. It's also affecting your heart. It's also affecting your other blood vessels. So there's a strong correlation between cardiovascular disease and coronary artery disease and erectile dysfunction. I've said it all a million times, and I'm going to keep saying it until I hammer the advice to those who want to listen, that if you go and seek help for erectile dysfunction, it could potentially save your life. And that's because early onset coronary artery disease will manifest with erectile dysfunction in your late 30s, your 40s, your 50s, even a decade, 15, 20 years before you're going to be at a point where you're going to get a heart attack or stroke because of obstruction of larger blood vessels, such as the coronary arteries that supply your heart. Those big blood vessels are going to be obstructed many years after the small blood vessels that are going to block the arterial blood supply to your male member, to your penis. The same thing with the vertebral arteries and the carotids. They'll be obstructed many, many years after whatever precipitating event, maybe it's hypercholesterolemia, maybe hypertension, et cetera, is going to affect your male member first, and then it's going to lead to you having a stroke. So let's change the path, your trajectory. Let's get you healthier. Let's get your erections now. Let's get your erections into your 60s. Let's get your erections into your 80s and your 90s. And let's have a healthier you and a healthier outlook on life. We'll talk more about this and other fascinating things on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks, and my guest today is ENT surgeon, Bahamian Dr. Charles Johnson Jr.
Nothing beats a Chikchani challenge. On September 27th, we're bringing the action, a 5K course packed with 20 thrilling obstacles. Start and finish at Fusion Superplex with energy, fun, and excitement all around. First time? No problem. Try the Chikchani Light version, built just for beginners. Got kids? Ages 3 to 7 can take on their very own Chikchani Kids Challenge. And this year, we're turning 10. So grab your team, mark your calendar, and come celebrate with us. Visit ChikchaniChallenge.com to sign up today. Thanks to our sponsors Fusion Superplex, Guardian Radio 96.9, Kalina, RBC, Advantage Insurance, Party Pilots Rentals and Events, Fincastle Media Group, Powerade, Calic, and Art of Graphics.
Bueller gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Bueller. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what are we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
The new Guardian Radio Sunday is here with a full day of diverse programming, kicking off with the first and last word in sports, The Press Box with Naughty and Earl the Pearl, followed by Temple Time, Caribbean and Urban American gospel hits, Vital Voices, Sisters in Christ, and Your Lane with Coach Trish Hanna, Remark with Garth Roseborough, Let's Talk Together in English with Lady T, Sunday starting at 11 a.m. right here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian Urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. We have our special guest, ENT surgeon, Bahamian Dr. Charles Jeremy Johnson Jr. We were just talking about a medical pandemic epidemic in our society in the form of obstructive sleep apnea. So just summarizing, obstructive sleep apnea is a condition in which the airway becomes blocked during sleep, which causes pauses in breathing. And this can lead to multiple health problems such as fatigue, obesity, men and women, daytime drowsiness. We spoke a little bit about the increased risk of being in a motor vehicle accident because of daytime drowsiness, the negative impact on you socially and professionally, talking about brain fog, lack of concentration. And that also afflicts those who have obstructive sleep apnea who are in high school or in university here and abroad. Increases your risk of heart disease, increase your risk of having a cardiovascular event. And for men, it can lead to erectile dysfunction. Let's talk about the women. So we have a very matriarchal society. Unfortunately, most families are run by women who are, as you said, stressed. They're trying to figure out how to pay the rent, how to pay the school fees, how to get clothes for their children, how to run five lives at one time. They may have their mother helping them, they may have an aunt helping them, but in many cases, they're alone.
Yep.
So the unfortunate thing is that a lot of these women, after having one child, two children, they're so busy, they don't have any time for the gym. They don't have any time to exercise at all in any way or form. It's difficult for them to eat healthy, even in terms of economics, eating healthier. You just go to the food store, you know, healthier food is more expensive. They're trying to get their kids fed, getting their kids to sleep. They're trying to get the homework done. And unfortunately, they become the lowest priority for that family. So they come last. And unfortunately, they're the ones who are the driving engine in that family. So they're the ones who drive everybody everywhere. They're the ones who provide the finances, unfortunately, for the most part, in most of our families. So if they have daytime drowsiness when they're driving their kids, if they have brain fog when they're trying to professionally succeed, if they're putting on weight and they're going to have increased risk of a cardiovascular event and they're the only or primary or the main economic provider for that family, it can be actually a very tragic event for not only that family, extended family, but for the society as a whole, where there is such a high percentage of women, at least 20%, who are fighting obesity, and then they don't know why can't they don't lose the weight, and it's the obstructive sleep apnea. The obstructive sleep apnea makes the obesity worse. So we need to find avenues for persons to have dialogue with their physician, have that confidence with their physician. And physicians, if they can't, if that's not their specialty, this is a medical fraternity. We always will refer to someone. We always want to have the best for our patients. We may not be the expert, but we obviously know someone who is the expert. And we can diagnose something. We might not be the best one to treat that particular disorder. But it starts with getting annual physicals. And a woman needs to have that time to get those annual physicals. They need to make that time. Even if it's 40 minutes a year, they can find that time, which can mean that they're going to live another 20 years to see their grandkids graduate from college or get married, to enjoy those golden years with yourself or your partner or whatever. So don't let your life be struck down in the prime of your life or lose out on those golden years because of something such as obstructive sleep apnea. So we were talking about a lot of the things that lead to obstructive sleep apnea. Sinusitis is a major problem in society. There's so many persons of all ages, from 12 years old to 82 years old, and everything in between or above, where persons are suffering, where they have nasal congestion, they always feel flu-like, they're always taking the Allegra, they're always taking the Claritin, the Nasonex, they're always reaching for Augmentin, they're always reaching for amoxicillin, and they just never get over that sinusitis. It's almost a chronic pattern where they suffer and the abnormal becomes their normal and they never have a normal life. Talk to us about acute chronic sinusitis, the treatments, the possible causes, and the age difference. How would you treat a 12-year-old versus a 52-year-old?
So the sinuses, and it's a topic of mine that I really love. So as you know, I'm an endoscopic sinus surgeon, minimally invasive surgeon. So we operate on these sinuses quite a bit, but only in the chronic and emergency situation. So let's talk about the acute situation. So the acute situation is a case where they may be having the nasal congestion, having the postnasal drainage, having some type of rhinorrhea or runny nose, as well as headaches and pressure between the eyes, pressure over the forehead, and pressure under the cheeks. Now, the sinuses are all connected, and they are even connected to the ears. So some patients may even present with what we call eustachian tube dysfunction and pain within the middle ear that can present as a oral fullness or a clogging sensation and even a pressure and painful type of experience. So this acute sinusitis will only last up to 4 weeks, and it can be secondary to an upper respiratory tract infection, a head cold, the flu. So you have that initial onset of a viral infection, right? Like a coryza, influenza, and then you have that inflammation from that virus within the sinuses. Now, the sinuses are there for many theories of why we have holes in our head called sinuses. Some say it has to help with speech resonance, has to help with the microbiome, and other various theories that have been put forth, but they're there. And so they're lined with epithelium or mucosa, and so therefore these mucosa would secrete a type of gel or mucus, and that helps to get any bacteria in the sinuses out. When you have this cold now, just think of an escalator or a conduit that's now clogged up with a bunch of suitcases or a bunch of weights, and now it can't move that debris out of the way anymore. That's when your sinusitis takes steps into play. Because once you have this lack of movement, on the top of that virus now, you have bacterial superimposement. So the viral illness would usually last about 7 to 10 days, and then what we call a double worsening would happen. You would have that viral illness, you would get better, and then after about 3-4 days, you start to get worse. And you're wondering, well, I just got over the flu. Why am I feeling worse again? Because that's your double worsening. That's a superimposed bacteria now settling in your sinuses because it was stagnant. It wasn't flowing and it wasn't draining as it was supposed to. And so typically patients will come in with these acute symptoms, and usually they can be treated with a course of medication. Sometimes with the bacteria, they will need a dose of antibiotics. Right, and this is in the acute setting that is complicated, and so we would give them antibiotics as well as a decongestant to help. Sometimes we even flush the nose, and we have very, very small cameras that can see inside the nose. We also have good technology in the form of a computed tomography or a CAT scan that actually shows us what inside of the sinuses look like. And so that can actually help us to diagnose any severe or serious situations. In the younger population with acute sinusitis, it can become complicated. As you know, the sinuses are within the head, and so therefore they are very close to the brain. And the blood vessels in younger populations, sometimes the valves that are not present in some of these veins can actually cause backflow of this bacteria-laden blood from the sinuses towards the brain. And therefore, when you have an acute sinusitis, you can have pus collection in the brain, and you present with a headache, change in personality, and this is in fact a medical emergency. And so when we do these scans on these patients, we would see that yes, the sinus has a lot of debris and junk in it that has to be cleared out, but also on the side of the brain, you would see a little pocket or a little collection of pus. And therefore, this would be a medical emergency, also a surgical emergency, and we would need to drain the sinuses by putting that patient to sleep. More often, patients would recover with just regular medical treatment from these acute sinusitis infections. And anything over 12 weeks now is more of a chronic picture. And so in between, you have subacute, but going past 12 weeks, that three-month mark, you have symptoms chronically. And this is a whole different ball game because the evidence shows that it's a different type of treatment regime, a different timeline of treatment regime, and patients usually don't recover quickly if they just take one set of antihistamines, the Claritin, the Allegra, the Zyrtec, and so forth. What happens in this chronic picture is a big predominance of allergy. And when I say allergy, I don't mean to bread or gluten, but just a hypersensitivity, right? So what happens is when any antigen, whether it's something like pet dander, pollen, dust, something in the air, or even temperature sometimes can cause a reaction in the lining of the sinus. And this reaction is very violent in compared to someone that is not hypersensitive. And so that reaction again causes what we call inflammation. And inflammation causes swelling. And it's the same escalator story where once you have that swelling, you can't get rid of the natural debris within the sinuses in a time-wise fashion. And so that leads to, again, buildup of debris and a change in the lining. So the lining goes from smooth to a rumpled type of lining with fibrosis and scarring. And so that leads to what we call polyp formation. And these sinonasal polyps are an endotype of what we call chronic sinusitis, and they have to be dealt with. These polyps can sit within the nasal airway. They can also sit within the drainage pathways, and they can press against the eye, press against the brain, and create pressure problems. And so what we usually do for those situations is grade them, and in the minor cases, we would try to treat with medication, and we have guidelines in place to allow us to be led on when to operate. Not everybody with polyps will need an operation, but if your polyps are growing, if your symptoms are worsening, it is advised that we do remove those polyps. Now, think about what I said. The polyps came from that background of allergy. So they didn't just show up and we can't just cut them and that's the end of the story. Those same stimulants are around in the environment. So you have to be aware of where you are, have to be aware of treating that hypersensitivity. And so the medications will be in place to kind of stipend or stifle that allergic response, to mitigate that allergic response. And that is something that is chronic. And so therefore, you have to think about the treatment as you're treating a chronic condition. So it's not a one-time treatment, but it's a consistent follow-up with your specialist to make sure, even after your surgery, if you had polyps and had them cleared, that you would follow up, let your doctor know, well, doc, I am not as congested as I used to be, which is good, and I'm compliant on my medication. And so we use various medications to try and alleviate symptoms. That is the main thing, and keeping the polyps from coming back, because if you don't keep them at bay, they can return in about 2 decades or so, and then you would be a candidate for surgery again. We don't want that. And so therefore, the conversation, even after someone has surgery, is an ongoing conversation to make sure that they stay polyp-free and symptom-free.
Let me talk about a common scenario that unfortunately is far too common in our society. A 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old who lives in misery. In fact, they're out of school all the time. They can't enjoy break time. They can't concentrate in school. They're not sleeping well because of nasal congestion, sinusitis, post-nasal drip, coughing all the time, recurrent tonsillitis, recurrent ear infections, either otitis interna or otitis externa. And the first thing that their parent or their guardian is going to reach for is amoxicillin, the Augmentin. And we know too well about the community antibiotic resistance and how it's starting from young. That is actually the worst scenario. So we have some 8-year-olds who are getting amoxicillin 8 times in a year, every single year, and it gives little to no relief for them. We're not treating the root cause of the problem. They need to come and see an ear, nose, and throat specialist. Let's stop having these kids have a miserable existence because of recurrent, as I mentioned, sinusitis, post-nasal drip, ear infections, et cetera, et cetera.
So the child, 6-year-old, has a very small airway. Everything is close. The tube that leads to the air is close. The tonsil is close. And the sinuses are closed. So when that sinus now drains backwards, all of that drainage with bacteria is falling right onto the tonsils, causing inflammation in that entire surrounding. And what can happen over time, sometimes, right, they may have an allergic predisposition, right, which is called atopy. And that just means their allergy comes into play at a younger age. And so what happens is after constant dripping, these tonsils will become inflamed and scarred and fibrosed. So once they become swollen and scarred and fibrosed, they stay large. On top of that staying large, remember the airway is only so big. So they get on a background of inflammation, upper respiratory obstruction. And so they have this repeated infection. They have this upper airway obstruction where they're breathing through their mouth just to get air. They're snoring at night. And they're getting recurrent ear infections because that tube that leads to the air is inflamed. And so they're getting fluid buildup, middle ear effusions, and what we call a gum ear, where that watery effusion turns very viscous and thick. And these children actually, around even a younger age than 4, when they're learning to speak, if this happens at that young age, they're not hearing all of the words. And so I have a lot of patients that may come with hearing issues, but this is their background. When you actually tease out the history that they've been having repeated infections of the tonsils and the sinuses and nasal congestion with a lot of cold, and it hasn't been addressed. And now they're presenting because they're not saying all of the words, when in true, it was only because of that effusion. So once you tease out the history and treat these patients, you realize that they kept very well because now the effusion is gone, they can hear, the sinuses are being controlled, and the tonsils are out of the way, so the airway is much more patent or open. So you solve three problems in one once you can actually tease out in these patients a history and diagnose them and treat them.
So yeah, so don't let the abnormal become the normal. If your child is suffering, if you're suffering, seek help. You don't try to take treatment into your own hands. Google is not your doctor. You don't bother. You don't go in and take responsibility for your child's health without getting any expert advice. You don't reach for your cousin's Augmentin or Amoxicillin and think that that's going to solve the problem. If it keeps happening, we need to address the root cause, and that's the most important thing in medicine. For any disease or disorder or condition, we need to, obviously we can give you medication to alleviate the symptoms, but if we don't treat the root cause, the symptoms are going to keep coming back, they're going to get worse, and whatever the root cause is going to cause even irreversible damage and make whatever treatment or management that you may need eventually even more difficult. And you may never reach normalcy related to damage to your kidneys or damage to your heart or damage to your male member as you're in form of your penis. So please, if something's going wrong, seek help. That's what physicians are for. That's what surgeons are for. And we're readily available, and we're willing to sit and listen to you and try to get you onto the path to a better you. So we talk about this being a very unhealthy nation. You've been around the world. What is your estimation in terms of, do you agree with the statistics? And I'm sure you're seeing it, I'm seeing it. We have one of the more unhealthy nations on earth in so many categories. What do you think the root cause of that is? Is it sedentary lifestyle? Is it genetics? Is it poor diet? Is it a mixture of both? Is it the fact that particularly males in particular or women are so overwhelmed with the daily duties of their family and work and everything else, they don't take time for their health? How can we change things in our society? How can we make the Bahamas a healthier nation in this generation and in the next generation?
So if you look at the history or recent history of the Bahamas, we have been tied very close to the United States in commerce, in trade, and in habit. And so therefore, some of the habits from Southern Virginia, like grits, we eat grits. You go anywhere else in the Caribbean, they don't know anything about grits because that's not a Southern thing. And so we have very heavily been influenced by those Southern states. And so therefore, our diet is similar. All right. In the last 50 to 80 years, we've realized since World War II, and those times when food was very scarce and we had to find ways to preserve food, we've gone from scarcity of food to a smorgasbord. Food is ubiquitous now, and so therefore our kids have six options for breakfast. We have six options for lunch and six options for dinner. And whereas half of us may not choose those six, there are some people that will have three or four options for lunch, including dessert. And that's three times a day they're overeating, which results in, over time, an increased obesity rate, an increased BMI rate. And so we do have the old Bahamian saying that, you know, what do they say? Meat is for man and bone is for dog. Yes, we do get that we love the voluptuous type of woman as a man. But health must reign supreme, and you must understand that there is a certain limit of BMI that should be had. And so therefore, knowing your BMI as a Bahamian is important, right? BMI generally, healthy is under 30, and 25 is where you should aim to be. And all you need to know for your BMI is your height and your weight, and you can then aim towards getting your BMI on track. But we do have a predominance of certainly increased BMI and obesity in the Bahamas. And our culture, the U.S. culture, lends to acceptance of that. But within the healthcare community, we do have to recognize and bring it to you, the public, that we have to bring our national BMI down to a more healthy type of limit. And that can be done just by education, these talks like this, as well as encouraging our families as a unit to get outside, walk more. We're not walking as much. And so therefore, just getting outside, doing activities, increasing your caloric expenditure will help in the long run. And also curtailing the amount of times we eat, which has been taught to be normal, but is very abnormal.
And we also have to be careful what we drink. And we're drinking far too much in the way of alcohol. I will address that in a show in itself. We have a call coming in. This is Urologist Speaks. Good evening.
Good evening, doctors. I'm really enjoying your show tonight with the ENT specialist.
Dr. Charles Johnson, Jr., yes, thank you for calling. Yes.
Dr. Johnson, right? Is there any specific diet that could help with the sleep apnea to prevent it?
Yes, so certainly as your BMI and neck circumference does relate to the amount of obstruction within the posterior throat, then certainly a carbohydrate depleted diet, so less rice, less breads, less all of those carbs that we would eat, hot patties, burgers. You try to enrich your diet with protein and vegetables, reduce the amount of carbohydrate you intake. Now, I must say that with a caveat that carbohydrates are used for fuel. And so therefore, if you are within the younger age bracket and going to do extenuous work, whether it be going on a job and doing heavy labor or going into a marathon or going to work out, you do want to have a proper carbohydrate diet to sustain you, to sustain your blood sugars. But in outside of that, you should have a very low carbohydrate intake every single day. So once you focus your breakfast on proteins, and focus your breakfast on vegetables and fruits, as well as lunch. And in the evenings, for the sedentary person that may walk twice a week, you can have, you know, a portioned amount of rice in the evenings, a portioned amount of kuku or quinoa or cassava or something, whole foods, not processed carbohydrates, but whole type of carbohydrates, sweet potatoes and so forth, with your protein. I think if you understand the diet of eating whole foods where it's not processed, I do encourage the eating meat, eating fish, eating birds such as turkey and chicken, and I do encourage vegan appetite as well, but you need to get protein somehow, so you need to educate yourself. But the carbohydrates is something that can be low on a regular basis, especially when we're more sedentary in this day and age.
You know, I really appreciate this advice, right? Because I think that we go after processed foods a lot, right? You know, the chicken and the fries and the chips, you know?
Yes, sir.
I guess if we just go for the, ground provisions type of diet, right? And I like you said, we'll be much better off.
Absolutely, sir. You are 100% correct. Thank you for your question.
I have one comment to make, right? One day I was driving, right? And I was approaching the traffic light. And then suddenly, the next thing I remember is that my foot on the brakes and the light was green. I have no recollection how I got into that state. Is that an example of sleep apnea?
That is an example of what we call narcolepsy. You may have had, what's most likely is you felt you dozed off or nodded off for a few seconds.
Yes.
And that is likely what happened. But there are other things that can be happening. So if you realize that is happening more than once, it can be dangerous. And so I would seek, medical opinion if that has happened to you more than once.
I mean, there's so many reasons where you can have a syncopal attack, which sounds like it could be from daytime drowsiness. It can be related to the heart, the brain, the endocrine system. There's so many reasons for it, but obviously you need to have a full workup, and you were very lucky to wake up with the foot on the brake and not on the gas.
Yes.
100%.
So use that to motivate you to go and get a full comprehensive workup, and that might save your life. You may prevent you from getting a heart attack or stroke, or it might have been evidence of a small grand mal seizure or seizure disorder. So Let's figure out what exactly happened. You were very lucky. God was with you that you had your foot on the brake and not on the gas. Let's not let hear about a tragedy where your foot was on the gas and you hit somebody or you caused grievous harm to yourself or you're ignoring what happened and it maybe was an early sign of something that we can prevent a tragedy from happening later, whether it's a month from now or a year from now or 10 years from now.
Absolutely.
So that should be a wake-up call that, you know what, you should be motivated more than anybody else to figure out what exactly is going on. Let's find out from head to toe comprehensively through every system, from endocrine to everything else, cardiovascular workup, make sure that there's nothing cerebrally wrong with you, and then we can make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Yeah. Listen, one quick question, right? My cousin called me the other day. She says that she was walking to work, and then the next thing she knew, she was on the pavement. Her head had hit the sidewalk, and she had bruises on her knees. She doesn't understand why that happened.
Again, syncopal attack. There are so many causes, and there could be multiple causes for that. So, for what caused your condition to happen or your circumstance to happen, for a syncopal attack doesn't necessarily mean it even within the same family. That was the same cause as your cousin, or there could be multiple causes. So, again, these are wake-up calls where you have near tragedy. She could have fallen, hit her head, and never woken up again. Or she could have had irreversible brain damage. So we don't know what bodily system caused it. It could have been as simple as hypoglycemia. But please let your cousin see somebody and comprehensively work you up, and then follow up with a specialist as necessary. And the same for yourself, sir.
Yeah. And listen, that's not an example of fainting when you fall down like that, suddenly.
There's so many reasons for it. I mean, you can even have even from the ENT surgeon being here, you can even have a issue with your inner ear. There's so many reasons where you can have fainting or syncopal attack or fainting. There's the list goes on and on. To pinpoint just from a brief history of what happened, we're not going to ascertain. We need to have a comprehensive workup, and it's important that you get it done. And there's no time like tomorrow.
Yeah. She has hearing problems. I mean, balance problems. I think you hit on something there.
It's possible, but both of you need to be worked up.
Comprehensive.
Yes. Yeah. We don't want to hear that she's walking across the street and then faints and then a car rolls her over. We don't want to hear that you fell asleep and you crashed into a car. Or to a pedestrian or something else, or that you had a stroke that we could have picked up, that there were warning signs that something was wrong, and we could have prevented that. So let's be preventative. Never ignore anything such as a syncopal attack or, as you mentioned, all the numerous symptoms of obstructive sleep apnea. That's just going to cause your life to go into ruin, the quality of your life to go into ruin, and the quantity of years on this earth to be diminished considerably.
Okay. Doctors, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your call. So we're winding things up. Charles, it's a pleasure for you to be here, and I hope that you'll be here again very soon. I'll also like to, as we started the show, thank my wife, Belle. I would be nothing without her. I'd like to thank my parents. Everybody knows my father, Alan Pinto, who was a teacher of 50-something years. He's now back teaching again. Actually, he never left. My mother gave decades of her life to guidance counseling, which is a very, very difficult, selfless profession, and she sacrificed and instilled the importance of education in her children and in her grandchildren. So thank you to my wife, Belle. Thank you to my parents and to my grandparents and everyone who's loved and supported me. I wouldn't be nothing without them. And I'm sure you feel the same, Charles.
Excellent, 100%. Shout out to my wife, Shanice, and my family, my parents, and my daughter. Be nothing without you guys. Thank you so much.
Have a safe weekend, and we'll speak again with another interesting talk. We're going to have Dr. Graham Cates, a family practitioner, on the show next week, Wednesday, and Dr. Wesley Francis should be back. Good evening, Bahamas.